welcome everyone to episode 59 of the Screamcast. I am your host, Sean DeRager, and with me, as always, my trusty sidekick, my peanut butter to my jelly, Brad Henderson. What's up?
Hey.
So today, very exciting episode. We had a chance to talk to the director of Necromantic.
Is it Necromantic or Necromantics?
Necromantic.
Okay. Did I say it incorrectly?
I think you've been saying it wrong this whole time. But that's okay.
Yeah, at least I don't have like 30 to your... You have 30 to my one. So.
we talked to... Here, I'm about to butcher his name right now. We talked to Jorg Budgerit. Jorg Budgerit.
Nope, you just keep doing it.
He corrects me in the interview, and I still cannot get his name right, and I apologize.
That's the sad part.
You know, I don't pretend to have it all together, Brad. I'm okay with my faults, and I butcher people's names, especially people outside of the United States.
Oh, another racist comment coming up. Totally there we
joking.
Go.
Totally joking.
There we go. If you're not American, I can't say your name.
Hell yeah, that's right. Then my last name is DeRager, and everyone mispronounces my last name. So
if your last name's not Smith or Lee, you're a fuck ass.
Exactly. We talked to him about Necromantic, and of course, a Necromantic 2, which is out right now via Cult Epics. So we'll be getting to that in just a little bit. It was an interesting interview because I had to wake up at 1 a.m.
I can't wait to listen to it.
You decided to freaking power through and stay up till 4. It was 4 a.m. when you finally got on the Skype call.
Yeah.
And
I'm actually thrilled to listen to it because I don't remember one thing. I'm sure we had an interesting conversation, but literally I was so like obliterated. I didn't drink or anything. I'm not obliterated
tired,
like that.
Man.
I was just like super tired and like I just didn't know what to say, you know. I can't wait to listen to
this
it.
This will be fun. I haven't revisited since, so it'll be fun for me to re-listen to it, of course. And, so that'll be a good time. We'll get to that in just a second. First, though, Brad, what's on your doorstep, man?
Holy cow. I almost forgot.
We'll get the door.
Pizza.
You got hookers on your doorstep today? You got the... mail order bride from Lithuania.
You're all about hookers and below.
I watched Strip to Kill last night, so heck yeah. I felt we went too long last time, but people dug it, so I'm not gonna worry about it.
No, we get to review movies, I think that's a pretty cool thing.
Nice. All right, man. What you got, man? You've had a busy week. Have you announced what you're up to? This is why you're so busy?
Not on the podcast.
Well, shit, dude. Now's the time.
Shameless plug?
Yes. Hell yes. Come on.
Okay. Fine. I'm in quote-unquote pre-production because it's just short, so it kind of sounds funny. And plus it's like very, very small crew, so it's not like, you know, there's 100 people behind it. But we started on a project of mine that I'm writing and directing called Ferocity, and it's going to be like right now it's like 4 minutes, but I plan to try to offend everybody or scare them, so
nice.
we'll see what happens. I can tell you that more or less people will be offended. Big surprise. But anyways, I can't say his name. Because he actually wants to hide from the project. A couple people wanted to hide from the project just because it is offensive. But a cinematographer that is known for a strong independent movie did very, very well last year. He will be shooting it. And then Marcus Ketch, that does special effects. He's worked with like Troma, with Toxic Avenger. He, you know, as we Are Still Here, the new Barbara Crampton movie that Ted Gagan did and Travis Stevens produced. He directed a couple movies called Rot and 100 Tears. He did the special effects for the new American Guinea Pig movie. But anyways, he lives in near me, and I contacted him and told him the project, and he was super excited. So he's going to be doing special effects, and this guy is like the fucking king. Like, this is like, he's Hollywood type, but like, he doesn't do Hollywood movies.
Nice.
So he's one of the best. And of course, I had to put my daughter in it because no one else is going to let their kid do this. I'm surprised I got away with it with asking my girlfriend, hey, can you do this? It was funny because and then one of my friends, he's playing an unknown role right now that I won't say because it kind of gives away what the movie's about.
Cool.
My buddy Kyle, that's who it is. He's helped out with a couple other movies that I've shorts that I've done. And and my buddy Mac Masters, who has worked like on Princess and the Frog and like Kung Fu Panda. He's a animator. Well, he has a small little company, Horse Fed and Goat Fed, in Orlando. And he is helping me produce and also going to be acting in it because I needed a guy that looks like a bum, and he looks like a bum. So we started pre-production technically like tonight. And then we shoot on May 18th and 19th, and hopefully it'll be in the can by May, June, maybe June.
Cool.
And then, actually the biggest part is what I'm most thankful for is there's an artist out there. His name's, Carpenter Brut. And, I believe he's German. And, he makes some killer music. He has like that disco giallo type thing. Well, I contacted him just out of the blue. And, I said, hey man, like I'm doing this project, you know, it's nonprofit. It's a short, not going to be making a penny off of it. And I really, really love one of your songs called La Perve. And I was like, is there any way you can license it out to me? He's like, dude, if it's nonprofit, just put my name in the title card and I'll let you use it for free.
Awesome.
And I was like, whoa, like that's crazy. So I was like, wrote him a long letter saying thanks. And, you know, of course, going to send him the project when it's done. But yeah, so all those things kind of came together for me. I'm pretty lucky. And yeah,
we're gonna
bash it out, and I hope to offend people.
Nice. I'm excited to see it.
So
very cool.
We'll see.
All right. So what arrived on your doorstep this week? Don't be so excited about it.
Yeah. Well, I've liked this movie for quite some time. It's the remake for La Femme Nikita. It's a movie called, well, it's called The Assassin. Now, you know, then they changed it to Point of No Return. But Bridget Fonda, it's basically almost not a shot for shot, but very, very similar to La Femme Nikita. But yeah, I think it's a great remake. It's a lot of fun. You know, I mean, I'm a big fan of La Femme Nikita probably more, but I've always kind of enjoyed the remake. So I was pretty excited to actually get that in the mail. I kind of forgot it was on Blu-ray, so I picked that up.
That's been on my list to get. I mean, Bridget Fonda is awesome, and then Luc Besson is scripted, but he is just based off his script, right?
Yeah, no, I don't think he's listed, I don't think he wrote. Yeah, based on his film.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, and then I picked up also. This is the first time for me. I just saw a bunch of people talk about it, and it was pretty cheap, so I picked it up. At Movie Stop, it's called Hooper. It's the Burt Reynolds movie.
Oh yeah,
it's a lot of fun. You know, I enjoyed it. I mean, it's just a stuntman, and it's just a fun movie. I mean, there's not too much to say about it. I mean, it's fucking Burt Reynolds.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's enough to solidify that it's pretty cool. And it's a Burt Reynolds movie, and Burt Reynolds plays Burt Reynolds. So I don't really have too much other to say than it's, you know, it's definitely, quite the ride.
Yeah. And Olive put that out, right?
No, that was Warner Brothers.
Was it Warner Brothers? Okay.
I think Olive put something else out with Burt Reynolds.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. There's a few movies that hit Blu-ray with Burt Reynolds. But the big one for me, and the one I'm actually, that's why I went over those two quickly, because this one doesn't even compare. I don't know if I mentioned watching A Girl Walks Alone Home at Night. A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. But this is a Iranian vampire film that's black and white. that is directed and written by a lady, and it's kind of a feminist vampire movie, as well as kind of a Western at the same time. It's extremely unique. But anyways, Kino Lorber put this out. So I purchased it, you know, because I wanted it the day of. And I tell you what, man, I get a lot of Kino Lorber stuff, and they've never done packaging like this before.
Yeah, the packaging looks amazing. It's on my list to get.
I'm going to slip it out of its slipcover here. I'm not too big on this, but yeah, it's got a hard, like, case, and then it opens up, and it's got a fucking comic book inside.
No way.
It's the essay and graphic novels, I guess, that they used in order to put together, and maybe that was it, and it's nice fold out, all black and white. It's got crazy fucking cool art all over it. I mean, it's definitely, like, they took their time with such a small movie like this, but this movie has it all. It's got a couple scares that's, you know, because you really don't think about it to be scary at first once it starts up, but there's a couple scares in it that are pretty effective. It's got one of the best soundtracks that is probably, I don't know, I'd safe to say in the past few years as one of the best soundtracks. It's just a mixture of even stuff that's, like, you know, American, stuff that's Iranian, just all over the place. And it's just a beautifully shot movie, and it's just, I don't know, everything that you want in an art house film, it has. Everything you want in a horror film, it has. So it just meets on so many levels, and it's just, I don't know, just some of the shots that they do. I don't want to give anything away because it kind of gives away stuff in the movie, but just some of the shots that are set up and just the atmosphere and the aesthetic, like, just everything comes together with this movie.
Wow.
And it's a little bit on the slower side, so I think people will kind of tend to stay away from it or not follow through watching the whole film because I've shown it to some people and a couple people fell asleep, but they were like, oh, it's a, you know, decent movie, you know, but it's like, it is, it's really dry and bland sometimes. I take that back. It's not bland. It's just, it's very dry and slow. But it's more or less because they rely on a lot of visuals and it's very, you have to be very patient with the movie basically. Because it's going to get there. It just takes some time. Like, yeah. There's this rocking, beautiful scene where the love interest and the vampire are kind of in their bedroom. And this song is like 5 minutes. And it plays, but it goes along with the song. And it's just kind of a romantic scene, but no dialogue. And it's just 5 minutes of them kind of like looking at each other and moving around. But it's just beautiful. It really is. So if you're into art house movies, pick it up. If you're into horror, pick it up. If you're into feminist movies, pick it up. If you like movies in general, you should watch it.
I've heard a lot of really good things about it. And I'm surprised that Kino Lorber put it out because normally, they're not really known for really putting out anything new. And this is a new film.
Yeah, I'm definitely and plus them putting out something that's so newer and such unique and cool packaging, it's kind of out of nowhere.
Oh, that's cool.
But yeah, I mean, even the sides of this thing has like artwork on the top and bottom, like on the spines. Like it has artwork there. It's just unbelievable. Like because I had no idea.
Yeah.
So when I purchased it, I got it. I was like, holy shit, what is this fucking special edition that I purchased or some shit? But no, it's just the regular blue. So yeah, and it's a little costly, but you're paying the packaging and everything, and it's a really nice set. So
cool.
Pick it up.
Yeah, it's on my list to buy for sure. Very nice. Anything else good, sir?
No, I've been busy.
All right. I wanted to touch base on a couple movies you've mentioned really quick.
Sure, go ahead. I'm really good at recommending stuff.
Well, you didn't really recommend The Voices. You said it was okay, but I picked up The Voices.
I mentioned it on the podcast. It's mine.
Yep. You know, that's what I'm saying. I'm crediting you.
Okay, good.
This
good.
Is a nonprofit. I'm crediting you. I watched The Voices and The Breed in one night. And because as we were talking about them, I ordered The Breed as we were talking about it, and then I was in Best Buy, and it was like $14. And I was like, well, you know, I'm a Ryan Reynolds fan, especially when he does stuff like this, so I picked it up. I thought The Voices was like wonderful. I tweeted like it's wonderfully macabre, it's such a weird little movie, and I think that people would appreciate it for just how it is on its own. It's just so weird and quirky and somewhat funny, and then it does go dark. But what I liked about it was, like, Ryan Reynolds is out of character. He's not the suave, sophisticated type smartass that he normally plays. And I like his character in it. And in the special features, I didn't realize this, but he did the voices to the pets too. So it shows him in the special features in the sound booth doing his voice, or doing like the cat voice, and then switching to the dog voice and back and forth and a whole.
Well, he does it in the movie too.
Yeah, I guess he does, but I kind of didn't really put it together. You know what I mean? I don't know, but I guess through the dialogue and in the scenes, I just didn't really put it together, I guess. But I really liked the movie. I thought it was great, and just really weird, and a weird take on kind of, you know, mental illness. Seems like a trend here, the Babadook mental illness and then the voices. And then one movie I'm going to talk about in a second is another movie about mental illness and hearing voices. But then, so the voices, I highly recommend it. It's very weird. And moving on to The Breed, though. The Breed I bought for like $3, so I was not expecting anything. And I was like, I'll bet you I'm going to hate this, and I'm going to tell Brad how much I hate it. That's what I was thinking when I got
it. That's awful.
But it's, you know, it's Michelle Rodriguez flick from 2006, and she needs to be in more action movies, by the way. She's badass.
She's only in The Fast and Furious.
That's all she's... She needs to be like a lead.
Girl fight.
Girl fight, but she needs to be in a lead, like, in the next few years, put her in an action flick.
Resident Evil.
God damn it. That's older stuff, you know, and not really... Like,
Avatar.
She can kick ass. She's not the lead character, like a lead action star. Jackass. All right, anyway, The Breed, run-of-the-mill kind of, you know...
She's in Machete Kills as well.
God damn it. Run-of-the-mill kind of like Night of the Living Dead scenario, people caught in a house, things outside to kill them, but the things are, like you said, a pack of dogs.
Battle Los Angeles.
God damn it, shut up. And, dude, you mentioned the dogs were insane. I'm watching this wondering, like, how the heck they wrangled all these dogs together.
She's in SWAT.
It's incredible. Are we going to have a conversation? You're going to keep listening off Michelle Rodriguez flicks. Anyway, dude, I second the...
I already had a conversation about The Breed. You're talking about movies I already mentioned.
I know. I'm telling you my reaction to it, jerk. God.
Revisit last episode where we talk about the place. I'm glad you watched it.
You son of a bitch.
It needs to be watched more.
That's what I'm saying.
I
want to second it, man. I think this is something you can get for really cheap, and I really think it's worth your time.
Yeah, it's super. It's so weird how underrated it is. Like, it's really a decent movie.
The dogs are freaking amazing. Like,
it's hard to believe, like, there's not CGI in the movie. Like... When they, like, the dog's going up the stairs and they fucking kick it and it goes out the window?
Yeah, I know.
I was like, wait, did you just kick a puppy?
Was there a stunt dog involved? I don't know.
Yeah. I was like, if there's a stunt dog, you're still kicking a fucking dog. Like, how is this happening?
The dog didn't sign up for this.
Yeah.
But it's awesome. Anyway, to the movies that I haven't talked about, that Brad hasn't talked about. Yeah. I watched a movie called
Thank God.
The Scribbler. And this was from
I talked about The Scribbler.
Not in the What's on Your Doorstep segment.
Well, I mentioned it before.
God.
I wrote a review on it.
Anyway,
I'll tweet the review real quick.
Okay, yeah, tweet the review. Jesus.
Dude, The Scribbler sucks.
I thought The Scribbler was pretty good. It's marketed as kind of like a kick-ass, you know, type comic book movie. It's not that. It's more of like... you know, it's kind of an elevated take on kind of mental illness, like I said with like the voices and, I thought it was okay. I thought it wasn't horrible. It wasn't amazing, but I thought the performances were good enough, and I was intrigued to get through the movie to see exactly what happened. I think it's like at least worth a rental. I think I got it for fairly cheap. But it's definitely not how it's marketed. You know, it's marketed as like a comic book movie, and it's not. It's more of a, almost like a character study, you know, on this girl that's trying to, she like has multiple personality syndrome or whatever. And And she's trying to basically every day use this device to get rid of each personality. And there's one called the Scribbler that wants to basically take over. And then there's some weird, like, superhero, weird kind of hints in it. And I guess it's based on a graphic novel, but I liked it. It's a short movie. It's like almost like 90 minutes. And
it seems like fucking 3 hours, though.
Really? I don't know. I dug it. I dug it for what it was.
Sasha Gray's in it.
Very briefly, yes. But I was like, hey, that's Sasha Gray. Yeah. Next up to something more awesome. I finally, for the first time, via UK Blu-ray, watched Walter Hill's Streets of Fire. The 1984 flick with Michael Paris and Diane Lane and friggin' Rick Moranis trying to be a badass. I thought this movie was awesome.
What'd you say? Michael Paris?
Michael Paris. P-A-R-E with a little thing on top of the E.
Yeah.
Michael Paris. Yeah. Anyway, this is a fun little flick. I can't believe it took me this long to finally watch it.
Me either.
It has everything that I love about these movies, like the rockabilly soundtrack, the 50s, you know, music soundtrack, the greaser type, you know, punks in it. It has Willem Dafoe wearing like leather waders. Just Willem Dafoe Raven. Is awesome in it. And it is a really fun flick, and I'm surprised it's not on Blu-ray in the States. But
it's on HD DVD though.
It's on HD DVD and it's on Blu-ray in via the UK.
Second Sight put it out or something.
Yeah. Yep. But dude, a lot of fun, man. I'm so glad I got this, and yeah, I'm surprised, you know, Walter Hill's, you know, I don't know why more is he like kind of getting looked over for Blu-ray? I feel like I don't know. But anyway, this movie.
Walter Hill movies? I'm pretty sure a lot of Walter Hill movies.
Why the hell isn't Streets of Fire on Blu-ray in the States?
Well, I don't know. Red Heat is. I mean, fucking.
It's penance for him messing with the Warriors.
Supernova. You know?
Yeah,
the Warriors.
Supernova's on Blu-ray.
Driver's on Blu-ray. Southern Comfort's on Blu-ray.
All right, well, this is overlooked. Like, this should be on Blu-ray. That's all I'm saying.
Is any of the 48 Hours on Blu-ray?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, there you go.
Shut up now. Okay,
here we go. He's even saying fucked with the Warriors. His version of the Warriors is a lot better than the original.
I actually haven't watched it yet at all, ever.
Then why are you going to talk shit about the Warriors?
I don't know, because I was going
to
watch.
He doesn't do anything. It's just transitions. That's all. He wanted to set it up like a comic book movie, and the studio wouldn't let him. It's actually pretty cool.
Nice. Well, I'll be watching that soon. All right, anyway.
You forgot to mention that Li Ving is in Streets of Fire.
Li Ving? Yep. Okay. I'm trying to move these quickly here.
He's in a band, punk band called Fear.
Nice. All right. Next up, I watched a movie. I believe it was Korean film, called No Tears for the Dead, directed by Jong Bom Lee, who did the Man from Nowhere. Have you ever seen The Man from Nowhere?
Yeah. It was my number one movie, like 2010.
Awesome flick. So this is his follow-up to The Man from Nowhere. And I don't think it's as good as The Man from Nowhere, but I think it's a solid flick about a guy who's kind of like an assassin or something, but he kills a little girl during a job, and that kind of haunts him, and he ends up being given his next mission is to eliminate the mom, and things go from there. And I think it's a badass little flick. The actor, the lead actor is really great. I like how it transitions between English. Everyone speaks their own language. So it's really cool kind of seeing the transition between all the characters and it's not 100% subtitled. But I like, it's always weird to me when in like a Korean film, everyone speaks Korean, even though they're obviously not from there. But this was a kind of a cool blend. It was a badass little flick and I really dug it. Have you seen this one yet?
No, but I mean, I know about it. I just haven't watched it yet.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's worth your time. Next, I watched Everly, directed by Joe Lynch, starring Salma Hayek. And this is one that, like, people were split, man. It was like some people really liked it, some people hated it.
No, there was just people that loved it and people that hated it.
Okay, and it's basically...
It's really weird.
It takes place basically in an apartment. It's Selma Hayek basically has to fight for her life in this apartment. And people are called, it's like Die Hard but with a girl lead. And I don't think it's
the worst interpretation of the movie. That's how it was pitched to me, too. And I'm like, oh, yeah. And then I watch it. I'm like, no.
No, it's a B-level action flick. I think there's some, you know, fun gore to be had. I think the beginning, it starts a lot stronger than it ends. And it kind of goes downhill as the movie goes along and the bodies start piling up. But I thought Salma Hayek was good in it. But it definitely leaves you wanting because it's just they can't make the one location work. Like some movies can, and this one like can't. It kind of gets, I don't know. It's weird. It's hard to explain. But it was like super cheap. And if you're curious, I'd say rent it. But I'm kind of torn on it. You know, like it's not memorable, but you know, Salma Hayek's pretty decent. You know, as an action chick.
But the movie kind of blows.
See, I wouldn't say it blows. I think it's a well done action flick. It's just Jason Statham was in it, it would be straight to Blu-ray or whatever. And it'd be a basic Jason Statham flick. You know what I mean? Except it's a hot chick with guns.
Yeah, but that doesn't do anything. I mean, it's over the top stupidity. Like it tries to be like the thing is it really tries hard to be kind of a fun action flick, but it's just like it can't keep up that adrenaline. It just like when it's sometimes the action's kind of fun, but then it just falls off completely. Like there's a few good moments that are a lot of fun, but after like everything just kind of pans out and about halfway to the movie, and then when the fucking mob thing happens, it's like, oh yeah. My god! Like you just kind of are begging for the movie to be over. Yeah, and it goes on extremely too long as soon as the fucking Raiden shows up. So,
yeah, it's flawed for sure. It's but that's the weird thing. Like I didn't hate it, but I didn't love it. So I must be one of the few that actually was just kind of give it a shrug and was like, oh, it's all right, you know.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
If you're curious about it, check it out.
Yeah, I was not happy.
No?
Yeah, I know that I saw that at Fantastic Fest, and it was weird because the audience was cheering and clapping, but after the fucking movie, I couldn't find anybody that actually liked it. I was like, no, it's that audience mentality at those festivals, man. It's like, all the directors in the audience, we have to clap. I have to like this movie. I have to write a good review, but when I talk to you, I don't like it. It's really fucking bizarre world.
Huh.
But just be honest. I mean, the movie's not great. You know, I love Joe Lynch, though. I've liked everything he's done other than that. Even his Venom short is really, really good.
Yeah. I think, you know, if he's like trying to stretch his legs in action. Or
I
whatever,
like that he took a break from, well, I mean, Mights of Badassdom was, you know, a break too, but I like how he's thrown in a lot of variety in there, being kind of a horror guy.
Yeah.
But yeah, if anybody wants to watch Joe Lynch stuff, watch Holliston. There you go. He's great.
And finally, a movie that I thought was going to be more of a genre thing, but it wasn't. The regular DVD cover makes it look like a romantic comedy, but I got the Blu-ray from Australia. Hugh Grant is in it, Sam Neill is in it, and Ellie McPherson is in it.
What are you watching with Hugh Grant?
But I thought it was a really cool movie. It's more of a drama, it was kind of sold as a sensual erotic drama, where a priest, I'm not sure what the religion is, like Church of England, so he's like a deacon or
something.
What's
the name of the fucking movie?
It's called Sirens. It's from 1993. And I was thinking this would be like, oh, this is like some erotic type thriller or whatever, you know, where like a priest or whatever is seduced by women. It's actually not as much that, but it's more – But I thought it was like a good exploration on kind of like what we see as obscene, like how different people consider different things obscene. Because he works, he's like a deacon or something with the Church of England, and there's an art gallery they're showing paintings, and this one artist played by Sam Neill has a painting of a naked woman on a cross. And so his job is to go meet this artist and kind of see what he's all about and try to explore his art and have like more philosophical type conversations with him about why he did that painting. And so they can like explain it, I guess, to the main church, whoever's putting on this thing. Anyway, this artist played by Sam Neill does specifically nudes. And, there's women that work for him that are the models. One of them, I think, is his daughter. And, Hugh Grant's character takes his wife as well. Who's she played by? I think played by Tara Fitzgerald. And it's kind of a weird exploration of like how the church considers things obscene about like sexuality and how Hugh Grant and his wife, their relationship is very stale, but these women out in Australia are very like sexually open and everything. And I thought it was really cool. Like, I was expecting just kind of this stupid kind of erotic type thriller or whatever, but what I got was it was pretty interesting. So I have to give it a shout out. It's definitely not a horror or anything like that, but, and there's a lot of boobies if you're into that. So it's only available on Australian Blu-ray from Umbrella.
Oh my God. It's only available.
It's on DVD. The DVD cover makes it look like a romantic comedy. The DVD cover US is horrible. The Australia Blu-ray is a little more, if you see it, the cover is a little more, you know, it's Ellie McPherson's naked back in water.
That's all right. I just tweeted that you're talking about that movie on the show.
Screw you. I thought it was really good.
Dude, I took one look at that cover and like those are the movies I stayed away from at Blockbuster.
No, I know. The cover is horrible. But like said, like I started reading about it, and then the cover for the Australian Blu-ray is like...
What possessed you to get this? This is what I want to know, because this just kind of solidifies more that you'll buy anything.
No, because I read about it, and I was interested in the plot synopsis about, you know, like a...
You just want to see boobies.
No, it was like a man of the church being like...
You want to see men of church boobies?
A man of church being like conflicted with like his sexuality. I thought was an interesting premise, so... And I'd read pretty good reviews about it.
Oh, okay.
Screw you, man. Do I make fun of you when you talk?
Yes. I might do it more than you do, but yeah, I didn't fucking talk about 10 minutes of fucking Sirens.
It's, I think, like I said, the cover, if you see this on the DVD, it looks horrible. I think I think that cover is doing it a disservice. I think there's a lot more going on if you're into that, if you're into that type of stuff. You know, if you're someone who's interested in religion and art and everything like that, I think it should have been sold more like that, but it's not at all. But that's all.
Okay.
It's sold more of as a sexy drama. We're going to see Ellie McPherson's boobies. Which you do. All right.
Eat nice.
Moving along here. We are going to be talking with the director of Necromantic, Jorg... I don't know how to pronounce his name. You pronounce his last name.
Butrig.
We're going to be playing that interview next. Stick around, though. We will be drawing names in a hat for our little giveaway for Coffee Shop of Horrors Coffee. And
pick of the week.
We'll be doing our pick of the week, where Brad will probably make fun of what I talk about some more.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Sirens. It's Sirens. Hey, guys, I like this movie called Sirens. Fucking Hugh Grant.
It's seriously one of his best performances.
Dude, this is the
I hate Hugh
We're
Grant.
The only podcast in the
Grant.
Fucking world that actually talked about Hugh Grant in a podcast. Positive. In a positive effect.
I usually avoid his movies, but he's good. And dude, Sam Neill. Sam Neill's awesome.
Oh,
all right.
Dude.
Stick around. Here's our conversation with
Stick around.
Jorg. Thank you. Well, today we are talking Necromantic 2, and we have a very special guest with us to help us dive further into the movie. We have the director, Jorg Butgereit. I always butcher last names, and I'm sorry. But, yeah, my last
name. You're known for it.
My last name is DeRager, so people always butcher my name as well.
So you feel like you need to do that to everybody else?
Yeah, I think it's this thing, you know, this deep rooted thing. I may need to see a shrink. I may have to go to some therapy.
Maybe just brush up on last names.
I should. Jorg, thanks for joining us to talk about your movies here. Necromantic has been a point of contention around my household because my sister-in-law saw the cover for the first Necromantic, and she got concerned, and it spilled into a family drama. So it got interesting,
Well, my girlfriend watched part two with me because I rewatched it last night, just to brush up, and she started gagging through the film, and then just gave up. So it's a lot of fun because this is definitely something that pushes limits, and I mean, it's definitely a conversational piece.
Yes.
So
the strange thing is that this film isn't meant to be a date movie, but but in a way it turned out that way. You know, the fact that I'm getting a lot of notes on my Facebook profile, like, well, I've seen this with my girlfriend and now we are married. So I think it's this kind of test. If you show your love interest, a movie like Necromantic, and she still sticks around, then everything will be fine.
I think so. It could be a litmus test for a relationship. That's for sure.
It will make or break the relationship. Yes. For sure.
You can cut, you know, the whole dating thing very short. Just watch Necromantic with her, and if she can, cope with it, then everything will be fine.
There you go. You know, I wanted to ask you, because watching these movies, I find them very interesting, and I feel like movies like these aren't generally my cup of tea, if you will. Like, it's nothing. They're not movies that
What's this supposed to mean? This kind of movie,
right? It's not something that I've gone out and, you know, let's just say I would have never.
I would be interested in a definition of these movies. Yeah. That's what.
Well, yeah, I mean, what was
I don't know.
What was the genesis of this idea of Necromantic, and then moving into Necromantic 2? Because in interviews I've heard,
Necromantic 2 was mainly a hoax, you know, mainly because I felt so stupid doing a second part to a movie that was not meant to be seen by a lot of people, you know, because the so-called success of Necromantic was merely an accident. Mm-hmm. Because I made it with my friends on weekends on Super 8. You can tell that this is not the major plan for being famous, you know, or for making a career. And that was, nearly 28 years ago. Uh-huh. So it was a film I did with my friends on the weekends. I was influenced by industrial bands that played in Berlin during that time, like SPK from Australia or Throbbing Gristle from Great Britain. They played over here in punk rock concert places, and they screened movies next to the concerts, you know, like from autopsies or castration movies. And all my friends were musicians, and I was the only one who couldn't play an instrument during that. You know, this was the punk rock spirit time. Mm-hmm. And so I just came up, because I was a film fan, that I could be a director. And I asked my friends if they would star on it, and I asked them if they would do soundtracks. And so we just did this film. It was like after about 10 or 15 short films I did. So I had this kind of reputation in Berlin and in Germany, but it was never meant to be seen by people outside of Germany, because this was nothing I could really hope for, you know. Mm-hmm. It would have been insane to think about this, especially living in Berlin, a city which had a wall around it. Mm-hmm. So everything was very limited. You know, the exposure of or the harm I could do was very limited.
That's very interesting. I mean, around that time, was there in Berlin, were there kind of like, because this film is the first one and then the sequel also are you know, well known for the controversy that they stirred up, and mm-hmm. was and I know that the UK had kind of decency laws and things like that, and was that the same thing in Berlin? Was there
Well, it was even worse, you know, not only Berlin, but Germany in general, because when, I mean, Necromantic 1 was too small. Nobody really noticed it right. In the beginning in Germany. It became bigger when it came back from, you know, via bad bootleg VHS copies from the US, I think.
Yeah.
Everybody thought, well, what's this kind of movie, you know, and then they found out, oh, it's from Germany. And Necromantic 2 was different. It was a little bit bigger. It was some years later. It was shot on 16mm, and it was presented in, yeah, still in underground cinema houses, but it was also screened in real cinemas. And the authorities in Munich, which is like in the south of Germany, in Bavaria, they're more, yeah, right-wing, you could say, down there. They confiscated the print and accused me of glorifying violence. And glorifying violence is a criminal act in Germany. Hmm. It's a, you know, it's a paragraph that's a part of the law that's normally meant to get rid of Nazi propaganda. Mm-hmm. You know, if you say, you know, like something like the Holocaust hasn't happened, then you glorified violence and then you could go to jail. But the authorities did try to use this paragraph to ban my movie and charged me with glorifying violence. Hmm. So they took the film prints away. They were searching our houses for the negatives and the goal for them was to destroy the negatives. And that was really frightening, of course. Mm-hmm. We already had an American distributor film threat by then, I think, and we told them that all the negatives are in the US, so they stopped searching our houses.
Nice.
And that was the luck. And that's the luck that you still can watch the movie, because otherwise we wouldn't have had a negative and we wouldn't have had something to do a transfer from right. now, you know?
Yeah.
So the only thing we got back from the government was a very scratched film print that they confiscated in Munich. And you could have never done a master out of this because they really scratched it. I don't know how often they watched the movie.
Now,
so
it was really
depressing, and it took us 2 years in court to get the film back.
Wow!
And finally, some film historian made like a statement in court, and he kind of testified that this film is art. And if something is art in Germany, then you can go with it. You know, then you can get away with it. That's the word mainly. So I got in. This was in 1993, I think. So over 20 years ago, I got this official artist approval from the government that gave me a lot of freedom in the end. But wow. It was really, really frightening that they could just try to take your movie and try to destroy it before you even had a chance to say anything.
Yeah.
Now, at any point, were you, because obviously it's frightening because, you know, your art is going to be destroyed and be taken away in a way. But was there any point where you're like, wow, this is actually really good publicity for the movie in a way? But,
you know, that's what everybody told me, you know. People were telling me, well, that's what you ask for. But I told them, yeah, but I just made a movie and I want to get my money back and I'm not allowed to screen it anymore. I'm not about to distribute it anymore. So what's the use?
Yeah.
It came, but, you know, after these 2 years, I complained to the government that that we lost so much money because they took the movie from mm-hmm. us for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they just said, well, they said anything, you know. So I asked a lawyer if we could do anything about it, and he told me this could be ages, and maybe in the end it's not going somewhere. So the only thing we could do was, you know, like sell it outside of Germany. And mm-hmm. I remember that when the videotape in the U.S. from FilmThread came out, it had on the cover, you know, like a logo, banned in Germany. And that was, yeah, to that extent, the only positive thing I could do from all this mess. Because the movie, yeah, because of the censorship problems in all the other countries, my movies are never sold to a lot of countries, you know. It's mm-hmm. They are still too complicated and too arthousey, too gory. There's too much nudity in it. And if you don't have censorship laws like in the US, where you can just put out a movie unrated,
mm-hmm.
then it's you can't not just exploit these movies. So, yeah, to be precisely, I think Necromantic has been, 1 and 2 have been sold to like 5 countries. And, yeah. I mean, you can imagine that this is not a lot.
Yeah.
Ask Michael Bay if he could survive if he could only sell a movie in 5 countries.
Yeah, I don't think so. Brad, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, even though, you know, I think that's something to be noted, and I'm sure that is kind of gotten across to a lot of people at this point, you know, because we're in, you know, 2015, and these movies have been out for, you know, quite some time, that people, I'm sure there's always that group of people that are like, well, you know, why don't you just tone it down? Well, I mean, how do you really tone down art? It's your feelings, it's your thoughts. So it's also refreshing to see that, you know, because to me, because I know people view Necromantics in a different way, but it's, yes, it is gory. Yes, a lot of it's fucked up. Yes, it's, you know, violent. But at the same time, for me at least, I don't know how true this is, because even I wrote a review of the first one, and I mentioned that this is that it feels like it's kind of an overlay to a personal side of your life. That, because I believe, like, even the first one, the two films are completely different for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's about, you know, people fucking corpses, but in a way, it's like, it feels that the first one is so much to the point of losing somebody. Like for me watching it, like, I'm not even paying attention to the fact that there's, you know, a dead corpse in the bed and the girl's obsessing over it. It feels like, personally, like that would be ripped off of just saying, this woman fell for another guy and this is his way of dealing with it. And the second one is trying to find somebody that you're a match, but you can't. And you're almost in a desperate manner trying to find somebody that fits your, you know, just you feel comfortable with.
Yeah, yeah.
And these films are relationship movies.
Yeah. And it's you know, the funny thing is the first review that came out when Necromantic was presented in Berlin, you know, we didn't have like a major release, of course. The film played in two cinemas in Berlin, or in 3 cinemas, and we only had 2 film prints. So one film print was driving around with a taxi all night. And the first review that came out was from a gay magazine, and they were writing that Necromantic is the first movie about AIDS.
Hmm.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, that was my reaction as well. You know, they were explaining, okay, here you can see that people are going to bed with death. So this must be
okay.
A movie. AIDS. And AIDS, you know, the fear of AIDS was very big, and horror movies, if Necromantic is a horror movie, deal with fears. So it made sense to me, but it sure wasn't one of my intentions.
Well, I mean, in a way, it's still almost in a way it's beautiful for other people to perceive the films just as, even if it was a message about AIDS, that they're not really focusing on just the fact that it's violent. And
yeah, but yeah, there's not so much
something from it.
Yeah, there's not so much violence in it, you know. I mean,
yeah,
especially Necromantic 2, you can imagine that, you know, after the first Necromantic, I made Der Todesking, The King of Death. That's the next film that will be out from Cult Apex. But in real life, I made that after Necromantic, just to be sure that I will be recognized more as an artist or as a filmmaker and not like a horror movie buff. And when I finally gave in to the requests by the horror fans that I should do a Necromantic 2, I gave them this, yeah, this really kitschy love story, because if you cut out like two scenes of that movie of Necromantic 2, you really have a very sweet love story, I think. And it's not so much like a horror movie. There are a few scenes that are gory, but if you put those out, the movie, you know, it doesn't build up tension or anything that has to do with horror movie. So it was more like a feministic approach I was trying to achieve. And the strange things that happened when the movie came out, it was invited to Austria to a women's film fest. And I liked that, of course, but these were really hardcore feminists. So they told me, well, because this is a women's film fest, we will take your movie and screen it, but you are not allowed to come because you are men. And I thought, wow, that's cool. That's the weirdest festival invitation I ever got.
Well, yeah,
so it was, and still to that day, you know, I'm approached especially by female horror fans. There are not that many horror fans, female horror fans. So I'm kind of proud that this movie works for girls as well.
Yeah, you know, I think the same thing happened, Brad, when we were talking about the fan or Durfan. It was the same kind of thing where directed by a man, but he got the, you know, what it's like to be kind of an adolescent girl in Germany at the time, or he that director captured that too. So it's
the funny thing is that, you know, in Germany this movie works totally different, Defen, because that girl used to be a very famous child star over here, you know. So she was doing like little hosting jobs in children programs, so casting her in Defen was, you know, like really taking her innocence away, and everybody in Germany was shocked.
Oh, okay.
But outside of Germany, this doesn't work, of course.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, like every kid had a crush on this girl, Desiree Nosbusch. And after that movie, I mean, it was very brave to do it for her, I think, but she really regretted it, I think.
Yeah.
I mean,
because in Germany, we still don't have a horror culture, you know? And that's a reason why it's so difficult to do this kind of horror movies. I mean, I experienced this right now again with our anthology movie, German Angst. You know, I did a half an hour episode in that movie, and I can tell you there's still, if you tell the people, oh, I'm doing a horror film again, they don't tell you, oh, yeah, why? What's it about? They tell you, why? Why would you do such a terrible thing? Are you, you know, why do you want to go back? You're an artist now. You don't have to do this.
That's interesting. So the culture in Germany is a bit different. What as far as the movies go, what kind of movies, I guess, what kind of movies would they want you to be doing? You know what I mean? Like,
well,
more art house type films, or?
I mean, I would say my films are art house types, but they don't really see the necessity to show violent images or images that are so honest. And the whole, I think my whole spirit, I mean, I was raised, you know, I started filmmaking with this do-it-yourself punk rock spirit. And this doesn't really applies to people, because in Germany you can only finance a movie if you do a deal with TV, because otherwise it's not reasonable, you know. You can't really get your money back. Mm-hmm. And if you do a film with strong images, then of course this doesn't work out. They don't give money to you. I mean, I did movies for TV, but these were documentary movies, and I could slip in some. I did movies about the stuff I like. I did a movie called Monsterland, where I traveled to, around the world, to Japan, to Switzerland, to the US, actually, to LA, to interview people who do monsters, you know. And this is a kind of movie that was produced by Arte. That's a French and German TV channel. But that TV channel is funded by the government. So they gave me money to go on this big travel and meet all my horror film monster maker idols, because it was in kind of an intellectual thing. And that's how it works over here. If I talk to people like John Carpenter or to the guy who's in the Godzilla suit, in Tokyo, or to Harald Giga, who did Alien. If I get these guys in front of the camera, then I can get away with it because I explain what this is all about. Mm-hmm. So in Germany, you need a manual to everything. You need a good excuse to deal with these kind of things. So what I could do is I do TV documentaries that deal with the same subjects I did in my movies, mm-hmm. but do it on a documentary basis,
Yeah.
I did like TV programs. It's a series over here, and also from Arte, from that TV channel called Into the Night. And you take two artists and you drive with them through the night and you shoot them. Well, you film them for like 8 or 10 hours, as long as the night goes. And then you make a 1 hour movie out of it. And that will be screened on TV. So I managed to sneak in with people like Asia Argento or with Joe Coleman, the painter from New York. So this is the kind of stuff I could do on a film level, and I could get away with it in Germany. But doing films like Necromantic is still impossible. And German Angst is something that it's sold now, and we just were fighting in Germany with the censors to get an 18 rating without having to edit the movie. And that just worked out. But it again was as exhausting as doing the movie. Now, just to get rid of the movie, rid of these censorship problems.
I guess that makes sense in that situation, that like why these movies are so independent, because you just need to kind of get them done,
Yeah.
How long did it take to film Necromantic 2? Were you guys kind of rushing to get it done because of that, or was it a longer shoot than the?
When we did the first Necromantic, we were really inexperienced, and it's just people, just my friends being in front of the camera and behind the camera. So the first Necromantic took like 2 years to shoot because it was only done on weekends. And Necromantic 2 was more professional in terms of the camera was bigger and we shot the movie in one go. I can't remember how long it took. Mm-hmm. I think it took like 2 weeks, like 2 months, maybe 1 or 2 months. But that's because, it's not, there was nothing. I mean, nobody was really paid. So at some days we couldn't shoot because the main actress would have gone to work or something like this. But we also had days that took on forever, because when we did the climax, for example, when she's cutting the head off and everything, all that stuff had to be done in one go because we only could do it for one time. And after that, the room where we shot it in was totally smashed up, and dirty, so we couldn't do it again. So this was like a 20-hour shoot.
Wow.
And it was more like a happening. And it has nothing to do with professional filmmaking, I would say. This was the part where I learned how to do films. But it was more like doing happenings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
which is something that comes good to me now, because I'm doing a lot of stage work. You know, I do stage plays for the stage productions for a theater in not in Berlin very often, but in Dortmund very often. I did a play about Edward Gein, for example, or I just did my version of The Elephant Man. And yeah, doing work for the stage is a lot like I did my movies back in the 80s and 90s. Mm-hmm. It's more, yeah, like doing an art happening, you know. Mm-hmm. Everything happens in front of the camera, and here on the stage, everything happens live in front of your eyes, and that's exciting.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely works for Necromantic too, especially with the climax scene, because there's just something so visceral and real about those moments that are captured, especially that scene. I mean, I mean, some of that stuff, I'm like, how did you, I mean, it looks so good. Like, even like the gore stuff, you know, it looks really good. It doesn't look cheap. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And,
but it looks dirty.
Yeah. There's this just griminess to it. Mm-hmm. That
I think that the stuff that worries the people is that it looks a little bit like a documentary, you know, because it's shot on 60mm, and the first Necromantic is even worse in that terms, because it was shot on Super 8. And the funny thing is that my episode in German Angst is called Final Girl, and it's like a little homage to Necromantic 2. So you have certain pictures that are, yeah, like or the whole, I don't want to give away what it's about, mm-hmm. but it's a lot like the climax of Necromantic 2, and but it's shot, of course, digital in HD and with a young girl and not with a grown woman. So it's it will be interesting for me to see if people make references between my German Angst episode and Necromantic 2, because to me it's a It sticks to that.
Yeah.
We will see.
We will, yeah. I'm very intrigued.
The movie is touring right now in I think we are in Brussels next week, then we're going to Finland, then to Austria, so we are on a lot of festivals, and I think we might have some invitations to American festivals in the summer, so that you will see it over there hopefully soon.
Nice.
Now, does it ever bother you? Because to me, after viewing both of these movies so closely, and I think growing up a lot, I thought that these were horror films, but in a way they're not. Some of your other films I would consider horror films, but does it ever bother you getting lumped into the, like, kind of one of the brutal horror directors, kind of that underground, like, August Underground, C-grade world?
Yeah.
Does it ever bother you at all? Because, I mean, that's good. Like, to be honest, you know, not putting down any of those films at all, mm-hmm. but you get lumped in to those, to that ultra-violent kind of genre. Does that ever bother you, or at first did it bother you and get under your skin, or you just have to learn to live with it? Like, how's your feelings on that?
I mean, when I made those films, there wasn't anything else like this, you know?
Yeah.
So I was not connected to this kind of ultra-violent genre, because there was no such thing. When I was doing Necromantic, my view was that I did something like John Waters did with Pink Flamingos and Female Trouble. I did an underground movie. And only later on, you know, when the video revolution came on and people were able to shoot films on videotape, which I never did because I always thought it looks terrible, that was the case that I was put into the same genre like these. And it's also the same in Germany. You know, we have these little dirty underground movies, horror movies from German filmmakers. And some people tell me, well, these are your kids, you know? And I read an article in Fangoria magazine about the German horror scene, you know, and they presented me like the inventor of a horror, of a new horror wave in Germany. And to read this, it's kind of ridiculous because it makes sense from the American point of view, probably. But over here, there is no such thing as a horror scene because it's impossible to do these movies over here, you know, and it's more like an underground thing. And it doesn't really bother me, to finally answer your question, that I'm connected to films like these, because I always felt that those are really, in a way, my kids, because these people buy my movies, you know. The art house audience, they don't buy VHS copies, they don't buy DVDs, but the horror fans, they do. So they really support me in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I grew up with horror movies, so who am I to say horror movies are bad?
But my
German cultural background kind of prevented me from doing straight horror movies, I think, because I always have to explain myself.
Yeah, you can tell, like, but I think that kind of helped, like I said, like, you know, the Necromantic movies aren't anything that I would normally, you know, search out. I've watched them for the show, but you can tell that there is a balance between, you know, I don't know, you know, like I said, I don't know if it's a way for you to explain the movie better to the culturally to a, like a German audience, but there is an art house feel to it, like you say, like you can take out all the violence and all the sex and violence, and it's these are relationship stories.
Yeah. You know? And the funny thing is that the art house aspect of the movie, you know, like, I mean, especially Necromantic, it's a very slow movie.
Yeah.
And this drives horror fans insane normally. But the first screenings in Germany on some horror festivals, you know, we had little underground horror festivals during that time. And they were kind of shocked that they had to sit through, you know, like this petting zoo scenes, you know, and this strange art movie that's in the film, all these. Yeah, they were shocked by that, and that was my kind of way of making fun about the expectations of the horror audience. Of course, mm-hmm. I kind of tortured them with a love story until they finally have some gore in the end, and that gore is not very nice. You know, you can't really enjoy it. Then you have all these seal autopsy footage. Uh-huh. So I was really giving him a hard time, I think.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Or were you going to say, Sean?
Well, I was just going to say that. I mean, you definitely come through it at the end with how crazy things get on both the films. I had forgot about the. I don't know if I blocked it. I'd forgot about the ending of the first Necromantic. All I had remembered was, you know,
that's an achievement to forget.
I watched it. Then I
don't see how it's possible.
Neither did I. Then I was watching Necromantic 2, and I was like, wait, did this happen in the first one? So I had to take out the first one, put it in, and double check. And I'm like, I can't believe that I momentarily had blocked that extreme part of the violence out of my head. It's ridiculous, but.
Maybe that was a defense mechanism.
I don't know. Interesting. I don't know, but yeah. I've never had that happen before.
Have you ever seen the Japanese version of the first Necromantic?
No, I haven't.
Because it's they in Japan, you know, they always blur the pubic hairs and stuff like that.
Okay.
And genitals and so what they did, they blurred the section where the fake dick is. So when you watch the Japanese version, you really have the feeling that this is really happening, you know, that he's having a hard time stabbing himself because you can't see the ridiculous fake dick. So watching the censored version is much more stronger.
Yeah.
And so the Japanese version is amazing.
Well, I'm sure the actor is very happy with the fake version, because you
But it should be, there should be a, I think on the Blu-ray of the first Necromantic, there should be a little featurette where I explain the differences between the different versions. And there you can see the scene, how it looks like in the Japanese version. So you should check this out on the first Necromantic Blu-ray. Yeah.
I was going to go somewhere else, and I totally forgot. Brad, go ahead. What were you going to say?
Oh, no, I forgot what I was going to say. But anyways, it's interesting because, I mean, we've had Nico B on the show, and it's almost comparable to how his I don't know if you call it really a double feature or not, but his pig in 1334, even though they are extreme and brutal, there's definitely a huge story under it. So it's interesting to see how the kind of the horror community perceives your film and looks at it. Because at this point in time, there's another film that's coming out that's called Spring, and it just hit theaters, and that's considered a horror film. And it's got a huge horror following, but there's not hardly any horror at it at all. It's a love story between a man and a woman, and she turns out to be a creature that she can transform. And so, but it's not even about that. Like, that's almost a subplot. And in a way, it's kind of how I feel about the Necromantics films, is that there is more of a love story and the torture of just relationships in general is there, and kind of like almost the subplot is the corpse fucking, I guess you could say, you know? So it's interesting to see that, and it still continues.
I would agree to that, but a big mistake we made back then, but we couldn't resist, was doing these posters, you know, but because the posters, there are pure exploitation.
Yeah.
And the video covers, you know, but that's because I'm a big exploitation fan as well. So I have these two souls in my body, you know, so I'm always, I wouldn't go for straight art house because this would be frustrating for me. And I wouldn't go for straight horror because this would be as well very frustrating to me. But speaking of Nico B, this might be interesting as well because Nico, he's from the Netherlands. And the Netherlands are very close to Germany. So when I was living in Berlin and in Germany in the 80s, I was always traveling to the Netherlands to get films uncensored because in the Netherlands they don't have this this strict censorship. And Nico, he was having in Amsterdam, he was having a video shop, and he was one of our first supporters because he ordered all the VHS tapes we produced on our own of Necromantic. He ordered them to the Netherlands and he sold them inside of the Netherlands. So now he's in the States, and now he's doing the same thing he did 25 years ago for me, you know. Wow. So he's kind of, distributing my films and making sure that they don't get censored and stuff like this. And it's still this kind of underground community I'm dealing with. You know, I'm not selling the films away to bigger companies who would probably censor the films to get them through the authorities.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of that, we had put out on Twitter for some of our listeners to respond with some questions, and one of these questions kind of goes in with this. It's from Twitter handle Zombievish. he asked if there was a sense of vindication that the BBFC passed Necromantic. I'm not sure if he means one or two, uncut.
The first one was released in the UK now. Yeah.
Right. So that one, that was passed uncut. Do you think it's just a matter like, you know, time kind of catching up with the movie, you know what I mean? Or did you feel more kind of a sense of vindication when that?
I mean, the fact that the BBFC gave it a gave it an 18 without having it cut in the UK is, of course, very pleasing to me, because I would have earned a lot of money if they would have done this 25 years ago.
Right.
And because Great Britain is very close to Germany, and it's a big market. And the fact, you know, it was hard work to get it through the BBFC. And the first step was that the film was, that Necromantic was shown for its 20th anniversary at the Leeds International Film Festival. So it was only a festival screening, and to do 20 years after the movie was made, you know. And the festival had to apply the film to the censorship board to get it shown one time only. Hmm. And then they had a lot of questions for me, you know, about the rabbit scene, all this kind of stuff. So I did a lot of explanations. I said everything straight. I was saying the right things. So they gave it a go for the screening. Hmm. And when Arrow Video released the film, acquired the rights, they already did know that the BBFC kind of let it through for the screening. So there would be no objections, of course, putting it out on video, because it's or on DVD and Blu-ray, because it's the same reasons why you, for the same reasons they let it go for the Leeds Festival, they should have let it go now to the home video market, and that's what happened. But still, it was, the case was that they really had questions, and these questions were asked to me, you know. So it's not like you apply a movie and they get let it through. They have questions, you have to answer them. So it's really, it's hard work.
So they have a sit down with you, and you have to.
Were in a different country. They were asking all these questions to the programmer of the Leeds Film Festival, right. And he asked me the questions via mail or on the phone. And then he gets. So it was really. I mean, today this is kind of fast with the internet.
Yeah.
But back in the old days, this was much more complicated.
What was one of the most bizarre questions that they had for the film, if you can remember, like?
I mean, the most concern was not about the subject of the movie. The funny thing is, even in Germany, necrophilia is nothing that is forbidden, mm-hmm. because nobody really thought about it, I think. what is forbidden in Germany is like, how do you say this in English? About, you know, like disturbing the peace of a grave. This is a term in Germany, and it's also a term that's very often used when Jewish cemeteries are disturbed by Nazi hooligans or stuff like this, you know. Mm-hmm. So a lot of stuff that is connected with the Nazi past of Germany is connected to the witch hunt of the horror movies, you know. So. Mm-hmm. But that's a different theme. But the BBFC, the most important concern for the BBFC was if the rabbit was killed for the movie, or if I just shot a butcher killing a rabbit that would have, you know, like the rabbit would have been died anyway or not. You know, this was the main question, which is a concern I can absolutely understand. And yeah, the fact was that I wouldn't, that we actually did just film an animal slaughterer, which was the father of the girlfriend of the co-author. So it was really, yeah, someone we knew, and we were knowing when he was slaughtering the rabbits. So we came by and we just shot the scene happening anyway.
Right.
So this was, I think, the main concern.
Huh. That's fascinating to me.
The thing is, I think films like Cannibal Holocaust have caused a lot of problems in Great Britain, and that's in the 80s, and that still is a concern to them, I think.
Right. Huh.
for good reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I still need to watch Cannibal Holocaust. It's on my...
What do you mean you still need to?
I have never seen Cannibal Holocaust. It's high up on my list of shame, and I just finally bought it. And I keep eyeing it on my shelf going, you know what, one of these days I just need to watch that.
Yeah, the thing is that it's the terrible thing about Cannibal Holocaust is that it's actually a pretty cynical and brilliant movie. Mm-hmm. But you can also really hate it for the animal mutilation.
Right, because that was done for the film, right? Is that the difference?
It looks like this.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've met Ruggiero Deodato a lot of times on festivals, and he's mostly known for that picture. I know when you meet him on festivals, he's always signing pictures of Cannibal Holocaust. But when you talk to him, he's more talking about, you know, films from Fellini and stuff, and it's really strange. So I'm not sure I never dared to ask him how he feels about his movie.
Yeah.
Maybe you should do after you've watched it.
We should, yeah.
I would just talk about Raiders of Atlantis the whole time.
Of course you would. Brad will not rest until he sees a Blu-ray release of Raiders of Atlantis.
Yeah, won't happen.
That's one of the... I've never seen that. That's the movie I have to...
Yeah.
Still watch. Okay.
I think my wife's up getting a drink. I just heard a bunch of slamming of doors, so I...
You had more questions from the fans, though, right?
You know, one of them was answered already about August Underground. You brought that question up, so that's cool.
What was the question, though?
The question was thoughts on contemporary extreme horror, such as August Underground.
Mm.
My
thoughts on these films is that there are some... I don't really feel the need anymore to see the extreme films. To me, it's strange. it made sense to me to do these kind of movies in the 80s because mm-hmm. I had a political reason. You know, it was like a protest against the censorship movement mm-hmm. now. But now, today, when you can see like real life killing and the internet, there is no point in doing these fake things. You know, to me, maybe I'm getting more and more sensitive as I'm growing older, but to me, the pure attraction of violence for the screen doesn't apply to me, and there's no attraction anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I've seen some of the movies that are supposed to be, you know, these are more violent and blah, blah, blah. But it's not an achievement anymore because it has been done before.
Right.
It's strange. And if it's,
Yeah, that makes sense.
No, it makes sense. And plus, these films don't have stories either. Sometimes they're just focused mainly on the violence. And that's kind of where my question stemmed from, is that how do you feel being lumped in that category? Because, I mean, honestly, it's more of art house for you rather than let's just see how far we can push these buttons.
But to be honest, I don't really watch a lot of these movies, so I really can't comment on the films and the no plots. But I remember that I watched, but that was back in the 80s also, one or two of the guinea pig movies from Japan. And there was no plot in it. And I kind of felt attracted to it because it was such a honest concept, you know. Just give them gore and no plot. It's like it's like the porn movie concept, which is also very honest, you know. So I wouldn't say I'm doing the same films. It wouldn't be satisfying to do these kind of films, but I can see an honesty in it that I can agree with.
Hmm. Yeah.
Well, at least you should be able to do these films and you should be able to watch these films.
Right.
You know, being in Germany, being still still suffering from censorship. Sometimes, to me, it's important that people can do or can and can watch what they want to. In the US, this might not be a big deal, but mm-hmm. over here it is. So for me, it's always important that people can just do what they want, and there are no limits.
Yeah.
Because there are no limits in real life. Why should there be a limit to movie making?
Are there more filmmakers out there still kind of pushing for, you know, against the censorship now, like with films? I mean, what other filmmakers?
What we are trying to do with German Angst is something like this, you know, pretending this is normal to do these kind of films. And it's a much bigger production than the films I did with my friends in the 80s. Mm-hmm. It's a movie that really looks like a movie. And it we will see what happens. You know, we get good reviews, but... it will be released on Blu-ray in May over here already.
Okay.
And the pre-orders are pretty good.
Good.
But it's also done totally independently without any funding money and something. So I'm curious if the producer will get his money back. And this won't happen only in Germany. You know, you need to sell it to other countries to get the money back. Mm-hmm. That's for sure. So this might be a statement as well to Germany. Yeah. To the US, it's not just like another horror movie, but over here it's a big deal that three directors really pretend to be horror filmmakers.
Well, I think we take it for granted here in the US, you know.
Yeah, that's it.
For sure. We don't understand what's going on in other countries. And as far as these kind of laws, like we're just so used to being able to put out whatever the heck we want to put out, you know, or watch whatever we want to watch. We don't really think about all the hoops that
so maybe that's my message to all these gruesome horror makers. Just come to Germany and do the same thing here, and then I appreciate you.
Yeah, oversaturated, so they can't ignore it or they can't fight against it anymore.
Yeah.
All right, we have another question here. This is from Rob Hunter. He says, did you ever consider a cross-marketing promotion with Swiffer brand mops and brooms?
What's this?
What?
He's referring to the broomstick scene in Necromantic. He said, did you ever consider doing some cross-promotion with some broom makers? I don't know, it's Rob. What do you
think? You know, during that phase of my life where I had no money... For the films, I would have taken any money, so of course I would have done. But nobody asked me for a product placement. Right.
No one was thinking that that far ahead.
Mm.
And then we've mentioned Der Todesk. I'm going to pronounce this wrong. Der Todesking, right? That's coming out in June from Cult Epics.
Yes.
Great. Fantastic.
That's a totally different movie. That's even more art house than Necro 2.
Well, I'm really looking forward to seeing it.
You have not seen it?
I have not seen it, so...
I see. This is my way of telling the people you're not getting a straight horror film from me.
Nice. Great.
No, it's definitely... Because that's something I've seen. Because I've seen that more recently. It's funny because even I guess growing up and knowing about Necromantics and seeing Necromantics and some of your other films, I guess until like these past couple years, I, you know, always thought of you as a horror film director. But at this point, like, I don't know if I can in a way like you are. But at the same time, you're a lot more than that. So it's kind of funny to hear and to listen about how people perceive your films. When they watch them, do they see an ultra brutal horror film, or do they see kind of because I remember having Nico on the show, and he said that some people view it as a comedy, and you even said if you know take certain things out, it could play as a comedy, it could play as a straight love story. So it's interesting to see how everybody, you know, the difference. That doesn't happen too many with, you know, with horror films or anything like that.
I mean,
you know,
what, what's really happening, or the closest I get to public reactions is when my films are screened on festivals and I'm there for a few days. Because the people are always kind of stunned by the movies still, even if they are so old, because they have this image of, okay, I'm going to watch a horror movie, but then I don't deliver a horror movie, and I deliver something more. And normally it takes them a few days, and then people come up with me and tell me, well, I'm still thinking about the movie I saw 3 days ago. And I think, wow, this is an achievement. There's this guy here joining the festival, and he watches like 10 movies a day, and he still thinks about this one movie I screened to him 3 days ago. So these movies kind of grow in the people. And I mean, I'm getting a little bit worried because I'm getting photos from friends on my Facebook page where they do Todesking tattoos, you know, like the poster, and there's this little drawing of a skeleton, which is kind of an impersonation of the King of Death. And this logo is on so many arms and breasts now that I'm getting worried, because this film never had a big, it will be a first time digital release in the US when it comes out. Mm-hmm. It has only been released on a very limited edition on VHS by FilmThread in the early 90s. And that's about it, you know? So this will be like the first big release of the movie worldwide. So this is interesting that it's what it does today. I mean, that's something that's really curious to me, that people watch these old films today and they can still get something out of it.
It's great when new life can be breathed into these films. I mean,
they have never been published.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's these films are finally getting their due for kind of public consumption, and you'll finally see what the reaction would be pretty interesting. Yeah. Let's see, and I think that's all we had for listener questions. I did have a question myself about Necromantic 2, and it's in regards to the movie that they go on a date and they go to the cinema, and the film is these two people eating eggs, having a discussion, and fully naked.
Yes.
Is that a real? Did you shoot that for the film as a film within the film?
Yeah, we shot that for the film, and the people who Wolfgang Müller and Käthe Kruse, the people you see are real artists, or very well known artists. They have a lot of art projects on, and they had these art a music group called the Deadly Doris. And they are kind of famous in the art scene. Okay. So I asked them to star in my fake art movie, which was mainly a concept of an even artier movie than My Dinner with André. You know My Dinner with André? That's a French film from Louis Malle, I think, from the 70s or 80s. Well, and it's just a conversation of two people in a restaurant, and I've never seen this movie before, but I remember I was having a subscription to Fangoria magazine here in Germany, and because I couldn't get these magazines, we didn't have any horror magazines in Germany, of course, and so I always got this Fangoria magazines from the US, and On the letters to the editor page, it was very often when people complained about some horror movies, the editor was always saying something like, "Well, fuck off, go and watch My Dinner with André if you don't like this kind of movies." So this was my reaction to My Dinner with André as well in terms of a horror movie audience trying to see a new corpse fucking movie, but what do they have to see? They have to watch an art movie first.
I just thought that was brilliant, and I had to write it down. I'm like, what is this that they're watching? But it was so, like, I got the, you know, there's a joke there, you know, I got it, you know, it's just.
Well, the people who watched the film 20, 25 years ago, they didn't get the joke. They just get bored. I can assure you.
That was so many eggs too. Like, are they going to, is this the movie? Does he have to eat all the eggs? Is this, you know, that was great. So fantastic. All right.
Okay.
Brad, did you have anything else?
No.
We're talking for 1 hour.
I'm sure you've been asked every question in the book, by this time. So
that's the broomstick question. Not
all right. We had one.
Just never before, and I never experienced someone who told me he did understand, he did get the joke with the art movie scene. So that's the first time.
Awesome.
And back from America. That's amazing.
Well, Yorick, thank you so much for talking with us about Necromantic and Necromantic 2 and your work. We really appreciate it. And we wish you the best with German Angst. I'm really looking forward to checking that one out. And I'm sure we'll be definitely talking about more of your films. So
maybe you can send me a link. If this goes online, then post it on my Facebook page.
We will do that.
Okay.
It'll probably be a couple weeks, I'll definitely send you and Nico links.
Fantastic.
No problem.
All right, Yorick.
Okay.
Have yourself a great day.
To you,
I'm going back to bed.
Then I'm going to do an interview for On German Angst this afternoon.
All right. Awesome. All right, Yorick. All right. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Time for our pick of the week, and then we'll be drawing one of your names out of a hat and reading some emails. Our question was what is your guilty pleasure, and so we'll be reading some of those emails and drawing a lucky winner for some coffee and a mug. But first, let's get into our picks of the week.
Yeah.
I'm I don't even know if I want to say what mine is. Mine's actually horror, so here we go. IFC Films released this.
This is another fucking Hugh Grant movie.
No, jackass. No, this is.
Thank God.
This is a movie called I Sell the Dead from 2008, and it's available on Blu-ray from IFC Films. I got it. I've had it for a while, and it's one of those, like, I was cleaning out. I was kind of rearranging my horror section to kind of move all the stuff that I haven't watched to the front, so it's front and center, so I can grab something. And I saw this movie, and I was like, and I held it out, and I put it in the front because I want to watch it again. But it's directed by Glenn McQuaid, starring Dominic Monaghan, Ron Perlman, Larry Fessenden. And it's a fun little kind of grave robber, like, zombie flick. It reminds me of, like, more of a comic take on, like, a Hammer film. But I really love this little film, And the Blu-ray is pretty great. It has some good, good documentary on it. So I figured I would, give it a shout out. If you haven't checked out this movie, it's well worth your time. Ron Perlman plays a priest, Father Duffy. Larry Fessenden is awesome. I love it when Larry Fessenden shows up as an actor.
He's great. Why? Because he makes you feel dirty.
What are we talking about? He doesn't make you feel dirty in this film. Dominic Monaghan is great. He's not in more, like, it seems like a lot of actors who were in Lord of the Rings, like, aren't in very many movies anymore. Maybe because they're butt-ass rich. You know, they don't have to.
It's like the most
first thing that came to my head.
Like, that's such an odd thing to say that no one in Lord of the Rings went on to do anymore. Like, I don't understand that.
Haven't been in a whole lot of movies.
Hugo Weaving has been in countless movies.
Well, he's, you know.
Isn't Viggo Mortensen in those movies too?
Okay, yeah, but I'm going to. The three freaking Sean Hobbits,
Bean?
Okay?
John Bean? Sean, that's because Elijah Wood's in a lot of shit. What are you talking about?
Nothing big. They do a lot of smaller movies, is what I'm saying. So they're picking and choosing.
Yeah, but was
more.
Elijah Wood like a big box office draw to begin with? No, that's he always did small movies.
You, there is something like up your ass today.
No, I'm just stating I'm just stating the fact. Like, I don't think Elijah Wood ever has. I mean, be honest. Like, no, serious talk. I mean, has Elijah Wood didn't do anything major before then? Did he?
Deep Impact.
Oh, he did do Deep Impact. Anything else though?
Nothing. No, nothing gigantic. Lord of the Rings
was probably, Radio Flyer big?
No, I mean he was like really well known though. He was in a lot of TV. Like he was really well known, but he was in nothing gigantic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it seems like what I'm saying is like after Lord of the Rings, a lot, especially the guys that played the Hobbits, they've been doing a lot of smaller, more low key stuff. I mean, Dominic Monaghan's been in a few things, but nothing much.
I don't even know who that is. I forget.
He was
one
that
of the dude in Lost?
He was one of the funny. Yeah, he was in Lost. Oh. I guess he did Lost. I never watched Lost, so. But it seems like they, you know, I don't know. But I like seeing him in movies, and this is a fun role for him. It makes me wish I saw him in more, you know, kind of starring roles. But anyway, I Sell the Dead. Worth your time.
Jeff Grace did the score to that, too.
It's really
pretty good.
Yep. All right. What's your pick of the week?
I'm
going to take the high road, by the way, and not interrupt you. As you talk.
Yeah, you just did. mine's from 2009. It's a comedy. It's directed by Mark Lawrence. It stars Sarah Jessica Parker and Hugh Grant. It's called Did You Hear
Dumbass.
About the Morgans? It's really good. It's about people that are witness. I'm just reading the synopsis on IMDb. All right. Mine. For real, though.
Isn't that the one where Sarah Jessica Parker gets, like, mistaken for a horse?
No.
And they put her down?
Oh, God, dude, that's cold. It's a good joke, though.
Go for it.
Mine, I think I've talked about this movie before on the podcast. I'm not sure. But it's one of my favorite action movies ever. It's really corny, though. But it has Mark Dacascos, which is, like, one of my favorite martial arts dudes. But it's called Drive, and it's not the Ryan Gosling movie. But definitely one of the best action movies that you'll ever see. It's basically this thing is implanted into Mark Dacascos' chest that makes him a superhuman fighter. And he escapes, and there's all these people hunting him, and he teams up with Kadeem Hardison because he's driving the car that he escapes in, and they stop at a hotel that Brittany Murphy runs, and it becomes a trio, an unlikely trio on this run-for-your-money type deal, but, like, the action sequences are epic, and some of the best choreography that you'll ever see in a movie. But yeah, it's just – it comes out of nowhere as well. I mean it looks like when you're walking past it like a Blockbuster back in the day, you did. This is like 1997 I think this movie came out or something.
Oh, yeah.
But you're just like – you look at the cover and you're like, nope.
They probably put it right next to Driven.
But no, it just looks like – the cover just looks awful. But man, I caught this like on USA one night. When I was younger, and I'm like, what the fuck is this? I actually caught the last like fight scene, and I watched it, and I was like, man, what is it? And so I used to buy all my movies from CD Universe back in the day because they always had the best prices. But I picked it up, and man, I've just loved this movie ever since. And I've turned a lot of people onto it too because it's just Mark Dacascos is a super underrated martial arts star.
He directed Guyver.
Huh?
He directed Guyver.
Mark Dacascos?
Yeah.
Mark the
no,
guy.
No, Steve. I'm sorry, the director.
Stephen Wang.
Stephen Wang.
Yeah. I was about to say, dude, what the hell are you talking about?
I got a little
about?
Sidetracked. Sorry about that.
It's okay, but I'm glad you took the high road not to interrupt me.
Yeah, I was supposed to do that. Sorry.
But, yeah, he just, like, he's a great martial arts I think, did he choreograph the movie too or something? somebody popular, I think, choreographed the movie, but I've heard before that some of the stunt guys that are in Mark Dacascos movies are actually some of his students. So apparently he can get away with a little bit more than what you can, because in this movie, I don't know if it's just me, but in this movie, it literally looks like he's fucking punching these people full force. Like, there's no, like, you know, there's always those fancy camera cutaways, and we watch fight scenes, and we're like, oh, it's just, you know, breakaway punch, or, you know, the person's leaning back. But this, like, there's a lot of close-up scenes, and it looks like they're really landing these punches. And, you know, I imagine not full force, but man, dude, it is intense. But yeah, just an all-around, like, great little action movie, and, you know, Brittany Murphy's cute as shit. She's a lot of fun, a little annoying, but yeah, definitely something to definitely check out. Like, yeah, and the guy directed this after The Giver or whatever, and yeah. I don't think he did anything.
Not too much. Not like
can't remember anything else.
Yeah. But we were saying Mark Dacascos. He was that badass sidekick in Brotherhood of the Wolf.
Yeah, he's the one that kicks the ass.
Wolf is what I want to say.
The Wolf.
Brotherhood of the Wolf.
Brotherhood of the Wolf. Yeah, he's
but he's awesome in that flick. That's the only thing I recognize him from.
Yeah. Oh, dude. No. Like, seriously, like, Mark Dacascos has
haven't seen Cradle to the Grave yet.
Yeah, like, he does he's in the Nico Mascarotic, whatever his name is. He's in Ninja Academy. Dude, he plays the Black Ninja.
Awesome.
American Samurai. He was in fucking Double Dragon. How many of you never seen Double Dragon?
Because it looked like shit.
he's in one of the kickboxer movies. He's in this really fucking badass movie directed by Christopher Gans, who did Brotherhood of the Wolf and the Silent Hill movie called Crying Freeman. Okay. And Crying Freeman is, like, really fucking good. And very homoerotic. Did you see – I thought we just talked about The Island of Dr. Moreau on the podcast not too long ago.
Maybe.
The remake. He's in that too. I remember being in that. But, I mean, yeah, he's – I think mostly his, like, late 90s work, especially, like, kicking ass in the Crow TV show. You know, because he played Eric Draven in the show. But, yeah, dude, like, everything Mark Dacascos does, from the lowest budget B movies to kind of more of the bigger budget stuff, he's always top notch. Like, I think aside from maybe his drama stuff, but he's also in Nomad the Warrior.
Oh yeah,
which I think you would really dig. And Jason Scott Lee's in that too. But yeah, like, I can't recommend any, like, Mark Dacascos is, like, one of my favorite people.
Cool.
And he's also, didn't he have, like, a chef show too?
I think so.
He's like the Iron Chef is what it is. Yeah.
The chairman.
Yeah. Anyways. Yeah, I know he's in that, but everybody makes fun of, like, they're like, I'm like Mark Dacascos, and they're like, Iron Chef? And I'm like, God damn it. I was like, I guess so. I don't know. I just known him from as a kid.
Do you see how shitty TV is nowadays? People like Mark Dacascos, instead of kicking ass, they're on a chef show. A chef show.
I got confused. With Mark Dacascos and Brandon Lee when I was younger.
Oh yeah, they look similar.
So yeah, I thought that was kind of the same. I thought that was the same person, and then, you know, I don't know, 13, 14 years old, I'm like, holy shit, no, it's not. It's two different guys. And Brandon, like, I'm extremely knowledgeable when it comes to, like, 90s action movies, because I watched everything I get my hands on, and I own a shit ton of 90s action movies on VHS that are unheard of. So, like, I know my 90s action stars, like fucking Gary Daniels and shit. So I will recommend the craziest 90s action movies to you.
Awesome.
And they're, like, those are the best. They don't make 90s action movies like that anymore.
No, they don't.
You know, like,
the newest one I'm hearing is possibly is it Skin Traders or Skin Trader, whatever, new Dolph Lundgren flick. I'm hearing that may come close. I don't know.
No, dude, it's not going to happen.
No,
it really won't. Like, I really wish they would get to it and do, like, because, dude, Cynthia Rothrock doesn't really do movies anymore. Like Lou Diamond Phillips doesn't do that type of shit.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like, Jeff Speakman, they're all burnt out.
Yeah, there really is no, like, action stars, you know, anymore. Like,
there's
very few.
There's another one, Brian Knowles, I guess, is, say, the Andrew Davis expert, whatever. We watched I actually bought it. I think, I can't remember. He like took a picture of a movie at a store, and he didn't buy it like a moron. And I think I was at that store, and I bought it, and I gave it to him. And he was like, he looked at it, he's like, "Why'd you fucking buy it?" I'm like, "Well, because you left it there." But anyways, it's called it's impossible to find. But I'm just gonna mention it. There's another action star by the name of Vince Madurko, and
these guys' names are incredible.
Yeah, this Madurko movie is called L.A. Wars. And it is unbelievably good, dude. Like, one of the best, like, 90s action movies ever. But if you could find it, like, definitely – I think it's only VHS only, of course. But if you can track down this movie and find out Vince Madurko – like, I'm friends with this dude
Vince
on Facebook.
Madurko.
Yeah. Nice. Wait, why are you making fun of Vince?
Not that the name's awesome. Like, Mark Dacascos. Vince Midir Dirk Dacopoulos. I don't know. All right, hey, we got to get to this drawing.
Man. I'm not done talking about 90s action
God
movies.
Damn, like, coming dude, soon, like 90s action cast.
Dude, Killing American Style with Harold Diamond. Dude, Harold Diamond and like Picasso Trigger and Hard Ticket to Hawaii. Ugh, these guys are unbelievable, man. Like, I want to do an Expendables movie with, like, all burnout 90s action stars.
Dude, I
like, how amazing
you,
would that be?
I guarantee you it would be better than any of those Expendables movies.
God. Like, these guys are so much better than Lundgren and fucking Schwarzenegger and shit.
Those movies are – I liked them for what they are, but, like, I'm never going to rewatch them. Like, they don't have that charm that these 80s and 90s action flicks have. Like,
missing
it's just
some better
weird
if they
charm,
just announce, like, if they announce the cast and show a trailer, that's way better than the movie.
Yeah.
Like, if they could just make fake trailers and just show, like, the 20 actors they got, yeah, that'd be like, yeah, all right, cool, I don't have to actually watch that movie because it's probably going to suck.
The problem is they try to get into drama and, like, actually have conversations. Like, no, guys, don't talk.
The only good part about Expendables is when they rag on each other. Like, everything else in those movies are just overly boring. I never even watched the third one.
It's
just
okay.
Because the second one was just unbearable.
It's better than the second?
Really? That ending sequence in the airport, driving around like a little Mini Cooper with Arnold Schwarzenegger shooting out the side.
The problem is they made these movies. The first one's hard R, then they made them PG-13, and it's like we go to these movies for the action, the blood, the guts, the macho, you know. And they took that out of those movies. The first one is bearable, and then the second two are just neutered, you know.
So, yeah, I remember not like kind of digging the first one.
The first one's okay, but it's not great at all. But the second two, they go PG-13. And it's dumb. They do an uncut version on the Blu-ray of Expendables 2, and they add in CG gore, and it's awful. All right.
Sounds fun.
CG gore. All right, let's get to these. We asked you guys what your guilty pleasures were.
I'm going to be – since I'm super critical tonight, I'm going to be super critical of these picks.
Mine was Blue Crush. Is a you know.
It's a good one. It's a good one.
I love that movie.
Mine was Bring It On.
All right. First, we have Chuck Zars. He's a listener. We talk to him a lot on Twitter. Chuck, what's up, man?
Chuck.
His email is short and sweet, but his guilty pleasures are Legally Blonde and Legally Blonde 2.
I give it to him.
I have never seen those movies.
I have. I had a girlfriend that loved them, and also I have seen the Broadway show a few times.
I did not know there's a Broadway show.
I don't like any of them, but Chuck, you get a pass in my book. I approve
of
those picks.
All right, we'll see who gets by Brad's radar here.
Lose listeners because I'm an asshole.
Please be nice. Don't treat them like you treat me. Darian O'Quinn writes in his guilty pleasures from the 80s teen rom-com Can't Buy Me Love.
Okay. Jeffrey Bass.
That was Patrick Dempsey.
It's Patrick Dempsey. I don't think, like, it's hard to say, like, any 80s, I don't know, like, it's kind of hard, like, because they didn't have that bubblegum pop feel yet. Right. So, like, anything from the 80s is kind of like an 80s rom-com. They're all cut. But I see where he's going with Can't Buy Me Love, because that was a little bit more, like, teen bullshit. But, yeah.
I don't think I've seen it.
Yeah, dude, it's really good. Yeah, it's a solid pick. I mean, yeah. I give it to him. It was one that was trying to be that lovey-dovey type thing, but also trying to stir away from that and kind of be hardcore. There's like a really emotional scene in that at the cafeteria where, you know, it's basically a stand up for somebody, and it's like really emotional, and it kind of gets tears in your eyes watching it.
Oh, nice.
I mean, it's a solid movie. Yeah,
I'll check it out. I'm a sucker for these types of movies, so I can't believe I haven't seen this one yet.
Yeah.
All right, moving along. Michael Engber, or do you go by Mike? We don't know. It just says it's signed, sent from my iPhone.
Cool.
I'm going to say Mike, because I call all Michaels Mike.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Just get to the movie.
He writes, I love me some 13 going on 30. Ruffalo is so dreamy, I gladly place it on my shelf next to my Blu-ray of Possession.
There you go.
I think that's a perfect love that pick. Movie. That's a solid perfect flick. Pick. Yep.
That movie blows. But
just because I said I liked it, you jackass.
No, I fucking hate that movie.
It's a fun movie. It's a fun, like...
I hate Legally Blonde as well. But these are guilty pleasures. This is the point of picking them. Like, these are good, solid picks.
If my wife ever wants to watch 13 Going on 30, I'll be like, yeah, let's watch it, whatever.
God, you fucking put in your tampon, too? Jesus.
All right.
Jeez. Only imagine, like, you get in an argument with your wife when you get home, and you're like, hey, honey, you want to watch 13 Going on 30? Make some popcorn and some Diet Coke.
All right. Brad's hilarious tonight. Brad is on fire. All right, here we go. Email here from Ron Compostine. I hope I pronounced your name right, Ron. I apologize if I didn't.
I think people know now.
Sean and Brad, this one's pretty easy. Anytime a friend or family member comes over, this title sticks out, and I either get made fun of or laughed at. I own all 6 seasons of Dawson's Creek. I love this show, and when I tell anyone, I get the same reaction. I'm a little embarrassed to admit it, but I totally own it. Any day now, I'm sure it will be announced that a new version will be coming to Netflix. Ron. Dawson's Creek.
A good pick.
That's awesome.
Dawson's Creek.
All right,
what's
finally.
Even better, like, about Dawson's Creek is when you realize who Kevin Williamson, and being that Kevin Williamson is Dawson, and his boyfriend in high school was Joey, but Joey's played by a girl. That makes me laugh. I mean, obviously, nothing wrong with gay people. I'm super gay. But I think it's funny, because watching the show and then reading Kevin Williamson, I'm like, oh, Joey's a dude. Like, how funny is that shit?
That's awesome.
But, yeah, anyways. I was a fan of Dawson's Creek myself when I was younger, but I just can't stand it these days. I tried, like, going back a few years ago, and I just can't do it.
No. All right, here we go. Finally, Josh Jones writes in, hey, guys, my guilty pleasure is 1991's Cool as Ice. I initially dismissed this movie when it was released due to my boyhood hate of Vanilla Ice, but years later, I gave it a chance, and I grew to love this film. This movie truly has it all. Action? Check. Romance? Check. You bet. Or sorry, I'm reading it wrong. Romance? You bet. Vanilla's whack raps? Yep. My wife shakes her head at me every time I watch it. This movie is so bad, it's good. I get looks at work whenever I bring this movie up, but I really don't care. Now, this has not been released on Blu-ray, and the only DVD that is available is a shitty DVD-R. I do own an HD copy on Vudu, but I'd love to see this get a Blu-ray release. Love the show. Keep up the good work, Josh. Thanks, Josh. Cool as ice, dude. I remember seeing that movie when it came out on VHS.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those, you gotta like it because it's just so awful.
It's such a product of its time, too. I mean, you know, how Vanilla Ice was, and he was so popular. And he's in this movie. Doesn't he say, I'm cool as ice, baby, in the film?
Dude, I haven't seen the movie since like probably like 95.
His lines are incredible. All right, let's do this. I got names in the hat right here. You can hear him shaking them around.
Dude, picture it didn't happen.
Huh?
Pictures or it didn't happen.
Well, this isn't live. If this was live, I'd...
No, it's live right now.
I'd live tweet.
Yeah, right, you need proof.
Grabbing one out of the hat. Here we go. The winner is... Chuck Zars. You have won Coffee Shops of Horrors coffee and a mug. Congratulations. Good sir.
Congratulations.
Jeez.
Where's my coffee? Oh, I don't know. See, I'm still kind of upset I'm not in a hat.
I sent you a mug and coffee.
But I'm kind of upset that I don't get thrown in the hat, though.
All right.
But if I get thrown in the hat, maybe I don't win the coffee. Maybe I can win something else.
No, dude. You're the host.
I have, like, a really good pick.
You're ineligible.
I don't know.
Dude, you get the fame and glory of being a host on the Screamcast.
I feel like I'm being cheated.
All right. All right, Chuck. Drop us a DM on Twitter. Of course, you know us. Drop us a DM. Send us your address. We will get this out to you. So congratulations.
What if he doesn't listen to the show ever again?
It'll be a long time till he gets his prize.
What if I said something on the last show that pissed him off?
I don't think you did. I think it was no,
really.
All right, and with that, that's going to do it for this week's show. We hope you guys enjoyed it. go make yourself some spaghetti and watch Necromantic. Talk to all you guys.
I don't know if I'd ever want to eat. Yeah, dude. Janice was gagging in that movie when I was showing it to her. Like, I was like, oh my God, are you literally going to fucking throw up?
That was one where I was like, I was going to grab a snack, and I was like, ah, screw it. Just give me a water.
Just took a water. Dude, I remember years ago, my buddy, he bought one of the guinea pig movies, and, you know, he was standing out, like, in a parking lot or something, just talking with a few other friends. He was like, hey, man, you heard you like movies. You want to see something really fucked up? And I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever. You know, and he's like, don't eat. I was like, all right. And he's like, it's really bad. I just don't want to own it anymore. I'm like, all right. Like, this guy already sounds like a fucking wuss. And he looks like a wuss. And, like, he was kind of a wuss. So, anyways, I'm like, all right, whatever. So I give him like $10 for the movie because that's what he wanted. So I'm like, I throw in a pizza, you know, like Totino's, whatever it was. This is, you know, years ago, living at home, pop in American or, you know, the Japanese guinea pig Flowers of Flesh and Blood that Charlie Sheen contacted the FBI on because he thought it was a real snuff film. So I'm watching it. I'm like eating. I'm like, oh my God. Like, I can't eat. I can't eat any more pizza. Like, I have to, like, put the pizza in the oven and put it on low so I can eat this later.
I'll wait till this is over. That's
like, I can't, man. Like, I can stand some blood, but, dude, like, the bone, like, sawing through bone noise. Yeah. Oh, my God, it's dude, the ooey, I can't do that.
Ooey, gooey, yeah, gross. All right, and with that, everybody.
You just described your sex life.
Oh,
the
yeah.
Ooey, gooey, and slimy.
Speaking That's of, my sex life. Whoa, check out the new poster for Gaspar Noé's Love.
Oof.
That makes me not want to watch the movie.
Dude, yeah, it's just, let's talk about that. Oh, I got another thing I got to talk about.
Here we go. Okay.
But no,
moving
I mean, seriously.
Moving into after hours.
No, I agree with you. Like, seeing that poster, it's like, okay, let's do something really shocking, yeah. But it just looks gross. Like, like if
Should
you
we
show...
describe it? Should we describe it? The poster is basically, you see a breast, and then you see a hand, and inside
grasping.
The hand is a penis mid-ejaculate.
Yeah, like, it's just, but it's not even pretty. It's just gross. And I guess this is what they're going for.
They're going for shock value, but there's...
But you're turning so many people away. Like, that's exactly what it is. It's like, hey, look at me push the limits with my poster.
Yeah.
Imagine what I do with the movie.
The first poster was like three people making out close up of their mouths and one's drooling into the other saliva string, whatever. And that's the guy, okay, you know, they're trying to be provocative, but this thing is just it's out of control. I don't know.
Right. Wait for never.
it's basically going to be a it's in 3D. It's going to be like a 3D.
Oh God! It's like that Japanese Sex and Zen movie that came out years ago. Whatever. Like I want cum shooting at the screen.
I want to know more about the plot. But yeah, in his last movie, what was the name of his last film?
The Into the Void.
Yeah, there's a scene where it's actually showing inside. And the penis is coming right at you.
Yeah, dude.
No. I imagine that is going to be the movie Love, like, for 2 hours. Maybe like, 5 hours.
Enter the Void was okay, but, like, I like shit, like, dude, Irreversible?
No, that movie...
Like, the fucking hallway rape scene for 7 minutes?
Yeah, I've heard about that. I don't even want to go there. It's like, you know what? I'm not going to watch that.
I don't know. It's kind of hard not... Like, there's a few elements about Irreversible that's good, but... It is intense as shit.
Yeah.
And some of the best special effects on a head smashing I've ever seen in my life. So I still don't know how they did that. And that's something that needs to be investigated. Charlie Sheen.
Yeah, let's go, Charlie. All right, Jeff, one more thing, because we got to wrap up, man.
Our buddy Brian Sauer.
Oh, shit. I am a jackass.
No, that's my department. I'm redeeming myself.
Yeah, Brian is in the hospital today with pneumonia. He's been trying to come on the show for like the past 2 weeks, and
yeah, but he keeps on like saying like you kept like it's funny. Hopefully Brian listens to this. It's like you were like Brian's sick. He can't record, and I'm like, does this Brian like, just hate us or
this
something?
Is like on Friday,
like how the fuck are you sick? Like. 3 days in advance to recording and like for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Fucking Brian has pneumonia. I'm like, dude, no wonder you fucking didn't feel good because he's fucking has pneumonia.
Yeah,
like,
dude. So we wish.
Yeah, so I was flipping through Instagram and he's like, he's watching Turner Classic Movies at the hospital. I'm like, wait,
out of nowhere.
Oh, that's Brian watching. I was like, wait, the hospital? Like, what the fuck? And I texted him like, dude, what the fuck are you doing in the hospital?
Did you rupture your spleen? Did something happen?
And he's like, dude, I've been sick for like 2 weeks. And I'm like, oh, so now I'm the jackass that thought that you just didn't want to record with us because I'm an asshole.
Now we're
like, things I've done to Brian.
We're looking at a schedule. We're trying to, I mean, he's very busy, but we're trying to get a show with all three of us very soon. We're trying to figure out what the hell we're going to talk about.
Hey, dude, he needs to record in the hospital.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome. Live from...
All right, so we wish I can't talk Brian a speedy recovery, and he will be back on the show soon.
Get healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Pneumonia can be a bitch.
Ugh. All right, and with that, everybody,
and
so
my
much.
Next thing
God
is
Jesus Christ. Are we done?
Drink coffee shop of whores.
I haven't even done any of the plugs. Go to thescreamcast.com. Listen
you
to
can
one of us.
Find me as Brad F. Henderson on Twitter.
Listen to one of us.net podcasts.
Sean is Song C. DeRega.
If you order coffee through Coffee Shop of Horrors, use the coupon code Screamcast. You get 10% off. All right, everybody. Talk to you guys next week.
See you, boppers. Keep bopping.
Bye bye.
Oh, don't tell me you're leaving. Party's just begun.
Dude, did you pop a few things before the podcast?
Dude, I think I'm high on, like, fumes from the stuff we were doing. I don't know.
You're using spray adhesive for your special effects?
No, we're... I don't know.
You're totally high. You've been huffing glue.
Do you know... I've, like... Over, like, the past, like, week, I've had, like, 12 hours of sleep.
Yeah, you gotta go to bed, man.